This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Okay, we get it. It's scary music. Very, very scary music. And perhaps some of the most famous film music ever created. But do we know the composer? We know that Psycho, that famous film of Hitchcock, that's the shower scene in Psycho. Who's the composer? Bernard Herrmann. And I have great partners with me today. Hi, this is Bill McLaughlin, and with me is
Joe Horowitz.
And
Ángel Gil Ordóñez. Great to be here.
Welcome back to Post Classical. We're following the adventures of post-classical ensemble. And today we're adventuring in a world that is sort of between concert and commercial enterprises for a composer. Bernard Herrmann, a great composer, born in New York City in 1911. Joe, you think Bernard Herrmann is one of the great composers, certainly one of the most underrated composers on the American scene in the 20th century.
Yes, I would say he is, in my opinion, the most underrated 20th century American composer. And what we're sampling today is an immersion experience, a festival lasting almost a month, a post-classical ensemble in D.C. about a year and a half ago, which purported to be the first attempt to assess Herrmann in the round in all four of his musical capacities.
Which
as
are?
As a conductor, as a composer of film music, as a composer of concert music, and not least, the most important composer for radio drama.
Hmm. He was working with Orson Welles, among others.
With Orson Welles and Norman Corwin.
Hmm. Why do we want to study him now?
Because modernism is over, and the stigma that was once attached to him as a Hollywood film composer has vanished, and we can assess him at his true worth. He was painfully aware that he was perceived as irrelevant and old-fashioned by the Northeast composers, and I think his time has come.
You know, when you say that there's a stigma attached to being a Hollywood composer, as a classical musician, both as a performer, as a somebody who loved to listen as a kid on, and as a conductor, I never felt there was anything wrong with Hollywood music. Hell, growing up outside the United States, what did you think about film music, both American and worldwide?
Well, in this case, we all knew the music by Bernard Herrmann related to the Hitchcock films.
Right.
And we loved them. To me, the biggest discovery of this festival we did in D.C. were two things. His counter music, mm-hmm. of which it was mostly unaware of, and then his work for radio plays. Mm-hmm. So for me, the discovery of the Sinfonietta, of which we will talk later, and the Clarinet Quintet, and then the radio plays were an incredible discovery for me.
Yeah, for me, I think where I really picked up a course, I think this is true of most Americans who like film music, make a little bit of an attempt to find out what's going on. You start picking it up with the films of Hitchcock, because as great as Hitchcock was in England, when he came to America and started adding Herrmann to his bag of tricks, it's much more than that. They're almost co-composers to me.
And of course, before that come Citizen Kane and the Magnificent Ambersons,
sure. mm-hmm.
his films with Orson Welles.
Mm-hmm. And it goes all the way through Truffaut, Fahrenheit 451.
Sure.
I mean, it didn't stop when he stopped working with Hitchcock, did it?
And Martin Scorsese, who was the director of Taxi Driver, which was the last film that Herrmann scored. Mm.
Actually, I knew David Raxon, a film composer, was perhaps one of Bernard Herrmann's closest friends. He used to call him Benny. He
said, right, everybody
Benny
did.
Was, well, he could be a creep, but he said the biggest heart in the world, but he was always yelling at people. That's what Raxon said about Bernard Herrmann. He was irascible. He's famously irascible, wasn't he?
We're going to hear a clip of Bernard Herrmann being irascible. I'm first going to read to you two things that he said about himself. He said, musically, I count myself an individualist. Mm-hmm. I believe that only music which springs out of genuine personal emotion is alive and important. I hate all cults, fads, and circles. And what fads and circles might he have been thinking of? Maybe the people who write 12-tone music? And the other quote that I brought with me says, my feelings and yearnings are those of a composer of the 19th century. I am completely out of step with the present. And he named as his favorite composers Debussy, Ravel, Elgar, Delius, Holst, and Ives. So this is a man out of fashion, and we're now going to hear him in an exchange, which will be self-explanatory.
Well, I can give an example, I think, of what Mr. Herman is talking about. He wrote an opera, remember, Wuthering Heights, and part of the music of Act One, Scene One, he used in a score called The Ghost of Mrs. Muir.
No, I didn't. That's complete false.
It sounds just like it.
That's because it happens to be me. I'm the composer of both. I sound like myself. I didn't come from that picture. I resent that.
I'm sorry, but
it doesn't. The composer, if it shows up in my film music or my opera or my symphony or street choir, that's my music. I mean, Al Copland sounds like Copland no matter what he's writing. Any composer sounds like himself no matter what he's doing. So what does it come from anybody else? I mean, Prokofiev, War and Peace has got a lot of his film music too, it sounds like, but that's nothing to do with War and Peace being a great opera. Both things were written by Prokofiev.
And this is a fair point, because when we hear his concert music and his radio music in the course of this broadcast, we'll discover that it all sounds like Herman. We had at our festival Dorothy Herman, one of the Herman daughters, who's a fabulous raconteur, and we'll hear one more audio clip now. This is Dorothy telling us what it was like to accompany her father to a screening of the film Psycho.
Daddy took me to a premiere of, it wasn't a premiere, it was a preview of Psycho. And after we came out, he said, I really can't quote what he said. He said, wasn't that the worst piece of crap you've ever seen? He said, it was so awful. And I said, well, it was pretty bad. And he said, how he can lower himself to make a film like that. And that film had a lot of bad feeling associated with it, because Hitchcock deliberately set out to make the cheapest film that would make the most money. And so his first deal for my father was to offer him a car instead of his usual fee, which Daddy refused. And then, of course, the music budget was minuscule, and that's why he had to use a string orchestra, figuring rightly that the strings of any other section, above any other section in the orchestra, can mimic and emulate the sounds of other musical instruments. But he had no use for that film until it became a cult classic. And then he couldn't say enough good things about it.
That is fascinating. That was the voice of Bernard Herrmann's daughter describing her experience watching a screening of Psycho with her dad. Her daddy, she keeps calling him again.
She called him daddy.
Yes. Yeah, it's cute. Because she couldn't. Yes. All right, daddy. That's a little scary. But you know, the funny thing is, she's talking about how low his film budget was for music. Initially, Hitchcock didn't want to have any music at all. This was going to be a big, sort of bold modernist step. No music in Psycho. And he showed a test screening to an audience in Hollywood, and they were very uncomfortable. When they got to the shower scene, the audience in Hollywood laughed out loud. It freaked Hitchcock out. And he went to Herman and said, yeah, maybe you were right. Maybe there should be music. How can you do it inexpensively? That's why it's strings. And that opening sound, the strings sort of slang, shriek, 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 shriek. That's been satirized over and over again. It's in The Simpsons, for heaven's sakes. It's in cartoons all over the world. There's even a Nike commercial with Tiger Woods that uses that music. Yes. That is some of the most famous film score ever composed. And that's our man, Bernard Herman, whom you are saying is the most underrated American composer.
Of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just do a snapshot of his odyssey. He's born, as you said, in 1911. In 34, he becomes a staff conductor at CBS. And then subsequently, as conductor of the CBS Symphony, he creates the antithesis of Toscanini's NBC Symphony. Herman is always raising a flag for a composer or a piece of music that you didn't know. And he had studio guests like Stravinsky and Bartok. He was an early champion of Ives. His collaboration with Orson Welles begins in the late 30s. He's the conductor for the notorious broadcast The War of the Worlds, 1938. Citizen Kane and The Magnificent Ambersons, the two great Welles films that he scores, are 1941 and 1942. And then his collaboration with Hitchcock begins in 1945.
Should we hear some music?
Yeah, we're going to hear the symphonic narrative from Psycho, which is not nearly as well known as it should be, because by mistake, we know this from John Malcheri, we've been listening to a suite of cues, which was not what Herman had in mind when he put together this narrative, the music of which was lost and had to be reconstructed by Malcheri in 1999. So after a Herman recording of this narrative, it was unheard until Malcheri revived it in the year 2000. And in fact, we did the DC premiere of the narrative from Psycho, which is an integrated musical composition.
For those of you unfamiliar with the name John Malcheri, wonderful straight-ahead conductor, could conduct Mahler symphonies, Mozart symphonies. I think he was a bit of a composer, but he acted as the sort of mainstay at the Hollywood Bowl for many years. Mm-hmm. And was so well-informed about Hollywood music. Mm-hmm. And it was his work. Essentially, they gave Malcheri a recording that Herman had put together.
Yeah.
And said, write it down. We've lost the music. We've missed all the connections.
Actually, he was able to retrieve the music.
Yep.
Mm.
But nobody had bothered to do that until he did it. So maybe Ankel can tell us about this symphonic narrative from Psycho, which you conducted in
DC. Yes, I mean, it's a phenomenal piece. I have to confess that at the beginning, when I received the score, I was a little wary about the thing. It looked very fragmented on the score.
Sort of sketchy in a way.
Yes, but it really works beautifully. So I think Malcheri recovering that idea of Hitchcock was a phenomenal discovery. It really works very well.
And so it has a shape, right?
It doesn't
just sound like a bunch of excerpts from a film.
There is absolute continuity there. It's not like, you know, putting together this scene together with this other. It really has a beautiful narrative and a great unit. So it was great to do it.
And the performers in this are the most classical ensemble?
Yes, we did that at the National Gallery of Art within their music series.
Well, sit back. This is a treat. Here is the, I want to get this correct, a symphonic narrative of Psycho, reassembled by John Malcheri and in a performance conducted by our friend Angel with Post Classical Ensemble.
Thank you.
That's wonderful, and that's a wonderful performance on how.
Thank you.
On how Hugo Ordóñez conducting post-classical ensemble music of Bernard Herrmann in a shape we're not used to hearing it. A sort of almost symphonic narrative of the film music for Psycho. Interesting the way he overlays at the end those long, slow string tones rising and falling, slightly dissonant sometimes, and then builds up very strong because there's been such agitation in the music and it becomes rather calm.
Absolutely.
But harmonically a little unsettling, at least for me.
Very, very unsettling, yep.
So where's this man get all of this language, Joe?
Well, wouldn't you say that Bartok is an audible influence on
sure.
this?
I hear Wagner at Schoenberg as well.
Yep.
To tell you the truth, I hear a kind of late romantic dissonance.
No doubt.
Like, I'm not talking about literally Tristan, but I mean the next generation mm-hmm. beyond.
So we invited a film music historian, Neil Lerner, uh-huh. to talk about the sources, the influences on Psycho, and we did this with live music. And the biggest excerpt that we performed was from the second movement of the Bartok Divertimento. Maybe while this is fresh in our ears, this is Adhel conducting the day before the slow movement of the Divertimento for strings by Béla Bartok.
Let's listen to this. God, that's gorgeous music. It's been a while since I've heard it. We used to do that a lot with the Simple Chamber Orchestra. Music of Béla Bartók, actually his last piece composed in Europe before he came to the U.S. in 1939. The slow movement of the divertimento for strings. And that's interesting because the outer movements of the divertimento are much more folk-like, especially the last one was kind of playful in a way. But this is a music of deep seriousness, almost a kind of Central European
sorrow. High anxiety. So Neil Lerner immediately went to the madhouse queue from Psycho to attempt to establish a relationship, which Angel also conducted.
Should we hear that?
Yes, let's see what we think.
Bring on the madhouse.
That's Angel conducting the day before he conducted the entirety of the Psycho narrative when we did this workshop about the sources of Psycho with Neil Lerner with a live orchestra.
But what we just heard was Hermann, also gorgeous music, but this not by Béla Bartók, but by Bernard Herrmann. You know, Joe, when you called it the madhouse cue, I suspected I was going to hear much more wild music, kind of frenetic or jumpy or even madcap. This is also in that same deeply sorrowful, slowly moving. The madness here is internal. Wonderful music.
Yeah, and he's a wonderful composer.
And Herrmann was adopting in a way from his own stuff when he put that into Psycho. Is that correct?
So he's cannibalizing his own Sinfonietta for Strings, 1935. And it's a work that we performed in its original 1935 version for the first time in the U.S., thanks to Christopher Husted, who was an indispensable factor in our Herrmann celebration. I know Angel loves this piece, and he'll talk about it in a second. I'll just quote what Husted wrote about it for the program book. He said, "It's by far Herrmann's most substantial attempt at an avant-garde style, and reflects his rarely discussed acquaintance with the stylistic speculations of Henry Cowell, Carl Ruggles, Charles Seeger, and Ruth Crawford Seeger." So, Angel, why do you love this piece so much?
It was like a love at first sight, because that's the least music I would expect from Bernard Herrmann was the Sinfonietta. And, you know, I have tried to figure out why he would write such music. Well, we have to understand that he was 24 when he wrote the piece. He was approached by Henry Cowell. So, I mean, Cowell commissioned Bernard Herrmann this piece for his New Music Edition orchestral series. So I imagine Bernard Herrmann at 24 thinking, if I have to write something for a series of modern orchestral music, it has to be modern. So what was modern for him? Bela Bartok and Arnold Schoenberg. Yeah, from Europe, that was the modern. And in the United States, it was, of course, Henry Cowell and Charles Ives. So there was an attempt to really write something modern. Your first conclusion, if this is not your aesthetic, would sound artificial. I feel he finds absolutely at home writing dissonant, working with atonal music, writing very classical counterpoint with atonal music. So I think it's incredible. I'm not surprised that he goes back writing Psycho to this piece because it has the ingredients for that.
I see what
you As you were saying before, is this tension, this internal tension,
it's
instead of this
internal music.
Exactly. More than effects.
Right, right.
Of course, there are effects in Psycho too. So what are the characteristics of the music, of the Sinfonietta? He uses violence in the highest register, which was, I mean, for 1935, I mean, of course, this is also a Bartok influence. The whole Sinfonietta is played mute. The whole Sinfonietta, from the beginning to the end.
It's played with the string mutes on.
All the strings
So it's a sort
muted.
Of whispered, even the most intense stuff is still covered.
Totally muted. The Sinfonietta has five movements. One is a scherzo. Even the scherzo, which is very poignant, even sounds more poignant because of the strings are mute. The glissandi that are, of course, a landmark in Psycho. Of course, he uses leitmotifs. So this is Wagnerian and Malurian.
Through Schoenberg to him. Well, I hear it. That's what I was hearing before.
Absolutely. It's totally expressionistic music.
Very interesting.
So I think of, in the expressionists, I think of Edvard Munch or Egon Schiele, rather than, you know, the Kandinsky. I don't think the Sinfonietta is Kandinsky. It's more closest to Munch, the famous
Scream,
Scream, by Munch. So I'm fascinated by this piece. I'm very happy that we did the premiere, as Joe said.
It's the American premiere of the original version.
The original version.
Boy, it was spectacular to hear this right now. And it's interesting, Joe, because you brought up a number of American composers. I was especially interested here, first of all, Charles Ives, but then Ruth Crawford Seeger, absolutely fantastic composer, one of the few women composers of that stature at that time. Also, incidentally, Pete Seeger's stepmom. Yeah, but she writes an adagio for string orchestra that is in this same mode, very slow, extremely dissonant, and very touching, very beautiful. The interesting thing is this piece, Sinfonietta of Bernard Herrmann, is actually 4 years before Bartok. Bartok didn't write his till 1939. It's an interesting thing. It's almost like he knew where Bartok was going to go, or had heard some things in the string quartets, maybe of Bartok.
The string quartets are the main reference for him, in my opinion.
He was supremely literate musically. His knowledge of repertoire, remember, he's a conductor as well, is vast.
This is very important what Joe says. What I learned in this wonderful immersion experience we had is that in the end, what he wanted to be was a conductor. That was actually
his dream, was to be a music director of an orchestra.
He was, I mean, this angriness came because of he didn't make a career as a conductor.
Spectacular. So you say there are five movements to the Sinfonietta.
Exactly. It's five uninterrupted movements. It starts with a prelude that goes right to the scherzo, an adagio, an interlude, and a set of seven variations, which are absolutely extraordinary.
Okay, Angel, you've given us all five movements. Let's sit back now and listen to you conducting Post-Classical Ensemble performance of Bernard Herrmann's Sinfonietta.
Thank you.
Music and a terrific performance from both classical ensemble. And you, Angel Giron Ordonez, my friend, my conductor in the studio here.
Thank you.
Music of Bernard Herrmann from 1935, and the composer is only about like 24 years old or something. The Sinfonietta for orchestra, string orchestra. Wonderful piece. And if you like that, stay tuned, because in the second half of the show, we're moving on to a clarinet quintet, which is spectacular from the few measures I heard so far.
You are listening to our bi-monthly broadcast of Post Classical here on the award-winning Classical Network with your hosts Bill McLaughlin, Joe Horowitz, and Angel Gil Ordonez. Tonight's program, the most underrated 20th century composer celebrating Bernard Herrmann. And we'll be back in a moment with more music of Herrmann and our three hosts.